The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Flypod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Hi, welcome to Cover to Cover. I'm Mark DeWitt. Well, it's his first novel. It's on the New York Times bestseller list. It's called The Yard. Alex Grecian, he's in the house. Alex, welcome.
Hi. Thank you. Thank you for having me here.
All right, now your first novel, but not your first writings, I guess. You wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls, right?
Right. I'm very old. I wrote a graphic novel series called Proof, which it ran for six books, and then I switched over to prose and wrote this.
All right. So, what's a graphic novel as opposed to a regular novel, I guess.
Well, a graphic novel is just a fancy way of saying a comic book. So it's just a thicker comic book. So I had an artist for that. So I wrote it and somebody else drew it and we collaborated on it.
When you're writing comic books, I mean, do you get the artist or does the publishing house get that? How does that work?
That's a good question. It kind of depends on the publishing house. If I were writing Spider-Man or Superman or something, they would assign me an artist. But in the case of my series, Proof, my artist and I owned that. We created it from scratch and we owned it completely. And so we got to pick each other. So that I've never actually worked with an artist that's been just assigned to me. So
it's more than just stick men and women.
Right. It would be if I drew it.
All right, let's talk about The Yard. Now, people are saying that if you love Sherlock Holmes, if you love that kind of book, you're going to love The Yard. Did you have that in mind when you were writing this?
They're saying that, huh? Who are they?
You want to know.
No, not really. When I was writing this, to my mind, it was just a crime novel. It was a thriller that happened to be set in Victorian England. I wasn't going for a Sherlock Holmes vibe, but as it turns out, when I finished it, there is a character in it who I think is a little bit like Sherlock Holmes unintentionally. He was based on a real-life person who actually was sort of like Sherlock Holmes, so it just sort of worked out that way. And of course, I love Sherlock Holmes. I'm a big fan and always have been. So just a happy coincidence, I guess.
Alex, in my mind's eye or even my mind's ear, I kind of hear that dialect, I guess, of England. When you were riding The Yard, were you like, hello there, were you like talking like that all the time?
Don't I sound British?
Yes.
Yeah, I was actually. Every once in a while, when I was walking around the house, my wife would say, "You're lapsing into an accent again," because during the course of the writing, I tend to write in the morning, and then during the afternoon and evening, I'm thinking of the next day's writing and what I'm going and. I tend to pace around the house a lot and talk to myself a lot. And we don't have curtains in our living room, so I'm sure the neighbors think I'm insane. But I do end up speaking for the characters a lot and do slip into an English accent.
You were living it. Did you have like crumpets and tea also?
I don't think I've ever had a crumpet, and I'm not a big fan of tea, but I did actually go to a little British specialty shop that's relatively near me and bought a lot of things that are traditionally British foods just to try them. So if I do have to write about them, I've at least tasted them. And SpaghettiOs weren't on the list,
no.
So that's...
So what kind of things did you sample so you could maybe bring to life in The Yard?
Oh, just the biscuits and the crisps and the English breakfast teas and spotted dick. I tried spotted dick.
I don't even know what that,
that
is.
That sounds much worse than it is. And shepherd's pie and those kinds of things. Just so I know. And I did spend some time in Ireland, so you know, some time in pubs there trying different things.
You've got to try the local yard of drink, I guess.
Yeah, right. Smithwick's and you know, lots of Guinness and that kind of thing.
Yeah. So.
Well, not lots of Guinness. I don't want to give that.
Lots.
I wasn't
lots.
Falling down all over the place.
All right. Why Victorian England? This is post Jack the Ripper.
Right. It's the year after Jack the Ripper. And the reason why, actually, I had to smoosh a lot of history together to make it all fit in this year, because some of the things that I talk about in the book actually happened after. But I wanted it to be set in 1889. And it is fiction, after all. Because those five killings, the Jack the Ripper murders, completely changed how the police approach crime solving, and completely changed the way the people in London thought about their police. They were hugely disappointed in them, kind of hated them afterwards, really, because they never caught Jack the Ripper. And morale was just in the toilet for the police. And so they had to snap back from that, and they had to start thinking of murder as maybe not something that they could understand. Because always before, if somebody killed somebody, it was over money or a woman or a man or, you know, whatever. Simple things that they could understand. And we still don't know why Jack the Ripper killed the women he killed. So they had to start turning to science more and more to try to solve the crimes.
Like a few years ago, they were even trying to figure out who Jack the Ripper really was. Did they ever close a chapter on that?
No, I don't think it'll ever be closed. They keep bringing it back up every few years, and somebody thinks he or she has the final solution. And there have been some really persuasive arguments and theories, but you can't know for sure. There's no way. So,
all right. Talk to me about the force here in Scotland Yard.
Okay. Well, the yard obviously is about Scotland Yard, not their lawns or anything, but
well, not where they found the bodies, I guess.
But it's more specifically about the murder squad within Scotland Yard. At the time, they were literally pulling 96 bodies a month out of the river in London, the Thames. And that's just out of the river, and those were murder victims. It doesn't count the whole city. They had 10 to 12 guys to solve all those crimes. So, and obviously this is right after the Jack the Ripper killings, when they feel bad about themselves anyway. And so they were completely overwhelmed. And that's basically where the germ of the idea came from. Just the incredible stress that time and place must have been putting on those men. And some of them rose up and rose above it, and are still some of the best policemen who have ever lived.
I think in the yard you talk about a 15-minute rule that the Scotland Yard had.
Right. Well, the bobbies, the constables who walked beats, had a big wheel. Well, they didn't carry a big wheel, but a big wheel was trotted out, rolled out, and it measured 15-minute increments. And so the constables had to walk every night. They had to walk these 15-minute perimeters, so they were always within 15 minutes of a call for help. Because, of course, you couldn't call 911. You would have to send a boy to run to fetch the constable if you were in trouble. So they didn't want anybody to be any police officers to be too far away from trouble, so that's where that came from.
The research that you did on this, Victorian England, I mean, you really bring this thing to life with not only the scenes, but also basically the smells in here, because there are a lot of different smells that you you come across, especially with maybe one of the inspectors.
I think I know what you're talking about. Well, hygiene was maybe a little different back then, and I think we would be shocked if we went and tried to mix with those people, because they had different standards, and they must have been used to it. But I imagine, just as today, there are some people we encounter who aren't maybe pleasant. I think probably it was much worse back then.
Yeah, you know, and I've always wondered, living in those times, Do you get used to it? I mean,
I have no idea. I have a pretty keen sense of smell, I'm told, and I think I would have to wear a Michael Jackson mask everywhere.
I have to. The yard. How much research did you have to do with this? I know that you have a body and a trunk, and
yes.
Basically you go through the autopsy a little bit also on this.
Yeah, autopsies were and are kind of horrifying things, and I don't think people realize just how, well, awful they are. So I did want to touch on that a little bit. And the body in the trunk is there because at that time, that was quite honestly the preferred method for getting rid of a body. People murdered each other, rather, like, it was easier to murder your spouse than it was to divorce her back then, or him. So they would murder each other, and, you know, you shove a body in a trunk and leave it on the train, and you're off scot-free. They didn't have, you know, fingerprinting or DNA testing or any of that. If the body's not in your living room, they're not going to connect it with you. So people got left in trunks all over the city all the time.
And in another city, they're not going to know who that person is, I guess.
Right, right. I mean, you would have to do some really extensive detective work to track down somebody from another city. So, actually, a lot of crimes went unsolved.
Rigor mortis sets in pretty quick, I guess, with a body.
Within 48 hours, rigor mortis sets in, but then it lasts about a day, I think, and then it goes away again. And a lot of people don't realize that. Rigor mortis is only there for a little bit, and then it goes away, and the body, as it begins to decompose, I don't want to get too gross, but it flexes up again and gets real flexible.
Yeah, see, and I didn't realize that. I just figured once you were kind of stiff, you were stiff.
Not forever, no.
So did you do? How did you do the research on that, or did you just know it? Were you a doctor?
Oh no, that's too much school for me. no, I have a shelf of forensic texts in my office, and then I call a lot of people. If I don't know something and I can't find it out, I try to find an expert, and usually people are very willing to talk about what they do. In this case, I did talk to some nurses and doctors, and in every instance, they asked not to be acknowledged in the book. They wanted to be anonymous, so I didn't thank any of them, but I am thankful to them. I guess they don't want everybody calling them.
With Victorian England, what kind of research did you do on that? Mainly books?
Mainly books. You know, a lot of books. There really aren't a lot of experts that you can consult because nobody around now was around then. So books, and then the internet is also handy. I mean, you don't want to get everything from Wikipedia. But if you need, you know, a train schedule from 1889, it's really hard to find that in a book because who wants to publish that? But
it's
there's some
reading right there.
Right. But there's some enthusiast out there who's put it up on you know, their websites. And so it's kind of cool to be able to find those things out there.
Let's talk about your main protagonist in the yard. Who would that be?
Well, actually, there are three protagonists in the book, which is unusual, but I think the main one is Inspector Walter Day, who's based on a real-life person named Walter Dew, who was the first international celebrity policeman in history because he solved a murder mystery. A doctor had killed his wife and then run off with his young mistress. And Walter Dew solved the case, and it was too late. The doctor was already on a ship and was heading across the ocean to Canada. And so Walter Dew jumped on a faster ship and overtook him in the middle of the ocean and went on and landed in Canada the day before and was waiting on the docks when the doctor showed up and arrested him. And by the time the doctor showed up, there was a huge crowd of people waiting there to watch him get arrested. It had made headlines on both sides of the ocean, and he was a huge celebrity. And he helped elevate the idea that Scotland Yard, you know, always gets its man. because, you know, he went all the way to Canada to arrest a guy before that guy even got there. So that happened after the events in this book, but I wanted to use him. So I changed his name and made him a younger guy. And, so we're kind of seeing the beginning of that guy's career. I fictionalized him, but he's based on that guy.
Now, you've got quite the criminal in here. Can you tell me a little bit about him without giving too much away?
Actually, the book isn't much of a whodunit, because I do say who did it pretty early on. It's more of a police procedural or a thriller. But yeah, the villain is called the Bald Man at the beginning of the book.
And I like that.
Did you? Oh, cool. Thank you. Well, you don't think of a lot of bald people in Victorian England, but there surely must have been. So that's set him apart from everybody else, and he's fairly sinister, and he's also fairly close to the police. He has kind of an inside track without giving anything away, and so he's able to sort of monitor their casework as they go along.
All right, so why getting away from graphic novels to a book that's probably over 300 pages or so?
Yeah, well, the manuscript was almost 600 pages. They kind of squished it.
It's larger paper. Smaller fonts.
Actually, this was going to be a graphic novel, because the graphic novel series that I wrote called Proof, one arc of it, one graphic novel, was called Julia and was set in Victorian England, and was set in a circus. And so I was researching circus migration patterns and came across all these crime statistics and decided to spin a different series out that dealt with Scotland Yard. And I had written two prose novels before this that are unpublished so far. And my agent had read those, and he said, look, you can write prose. Why don't you write this as prose instead of as a graphic novel? Because I think I could get a publisher interested. And he definitely did do that once I wrote it. So it was a little bit of a risk, but I'm glad I took it.
So why did the publicist, after he read your other two books or manuscripts, why did he say write a different one instead of maybe looking at one or two of those?
Well, we were looking at those two, and then he just thought that this particular idea would be sort of a better launching for my prose career, which I always wanted. I love writing graphic novels and comic books, but I also really love writing prose, and it's actually easier for me, prose is, just because of the format. So he just thought that this would sort of interest publishers more than my other two, which were modern crime novels, and there's a lot more competition on the bookshelves for that kind of thing.
What are the challenges of writing this large of a novel as opposed to the graphic novels?
Actually, I am a faster writer, I think, writing prose than writing a graphic novel, even something long, because in prose I can put two people in a room and have them talk and just let it, you know, let it go until they're done talking, and there's a chapter. In comic books and in graphic novels, it's a much different way of writing. You start a script, if you're curious, for a graphic novel, you start with page one, and then you say panel one, and then you have to describe for the artist everything that's in panel one, who the characters are, what they're wearing, how they're standing, what they're doing, and then you write a couple lines of dialogue, because not that much dialogue will fit in a panel, and then you stop. And then you write panel two, and you write all the description of what the artist needs to draw in panel two, and then a couple lines of dialogue, and then you stop. And so there's a staccato kind of stop-start rhythm that for me is unnatural and difficult to write. Not that I don't enjoy it, but it's a very different way of writing.
It's almost like a storyboard without the pictures.
Yeah, it pretty much is exactly that. You're describing the storyboard instead of drawing it, and then you hand it over to somebody else to interpret and draw that.
You're almost like the not only the writer, but the director and everything else.
That's exactly what it is, right? Because, yeah, it's a collaboration, and you don't really have somebody calling the shots and telling each of you what to do. You're kind of guiding each other through. And when I do work with artists, they have free rein to sort of, you know, change the pictures as long as the story gets told.
They send that in to you. I suppose they have a mock-up on it, do they, or something like that? Or
the artist that I primarily worked with on Proof is very fast, and so I would send him a script, and 2 days later I would get, you know, the first five pages to look at. And, you know, he was also very accommodating, and he would, if I thought something was just way off base, he would gladly change it very quickly. But then I would go through and adjust the dialogue to make sure it actually fit the art as opposed to what I saw in my head when I wrote it.
I was just going to mention that a lot of authors, or I can't say a lot of them, but some authors won't listen to the audiobooks because they've already got the voice and everything in their head. When you send out your manuscript, I guess, to the artist, they're envisioning something that they're writing. I mean, here's this man, and they send it back to you. Are you like, oh, yeah, this is fine? Or do you say, well, you know, I kind of thought this guy might have had larger ears or something?
Ears are always the problem.
Yeah, I know.
No, usually the artist will do character designs before drawing a book. And so he'll go through a few iterations of a character to make sure that you're both happy and it's somebody he wants to draw and it's sort of what you had in mind. But every once in a while, it'll really surprise you. And yeah, the audiobook, I haven't listened to all of The Yard on audio yet. It's weird hearing my characters in a different voice.
So The Yard is out on audiobook. How long is it? I mean, is it unedited? How does that go? Unabridged?
I think it's unabridged, yeah. And I think it's about 8 hours long because it's a longish book. And he speaks, I've listened to a little bit of it, and he speaks pretty slowly. So it's very easy to understand, I think.
Would you say there's a lot of dialogue in The Yard?
Oh, yeah, I would say so. I mean, there's a fair amount of description, but dialogue is the most fun thing to write. So, yeah, there's a lot there.
I think sometimes that's the hardest thing also to get across in a audio book. There's really an art to that.
I think so. I've never done it, and obviously you can hear my voice. I would be very bad at it. But I read to my son at night, every night, and, you know, I do a lot of voices, and there's only so many voices I could do. So,
well, let's find out here. You've got The Yard out right now. It's in hardcover. What's next for Alex Grecian?
Well, I'm actually, when I'm not talking to you, I'm writing the sequel in my hotel room. So next up is the paperback version of The Yard in the spring, and immediately following that is the sequel to The Yard called The Black Country.
You know, I can almost see this made into a movie or a made-for-television
Me too.
series or something. If that happened, who do you think might be some of the people that you'd love to see as the characters?
That's a cool question. Of course, I wouldn't get any of the people that I... But I actually, there's a character in the book, a main character called Bernard Kingsley. He's a doctor, and he's the first forensic scientist. And in my head, I sort of see Daniel Craig for that part. I think he would be awesome. I like Daniel Radcliffe, who played Harry Potter, for maybe the main guy. And I like Benedict Cumberbatch, who plays Sherlock on the Sherlock series on PBS. I would love for him to be Hammersmith, but my wife disagrees with me. She doesn't think he's cute enough.
So with The Yard, a brand new novel, did you hang up the graphic novels?
I kind of had to for now. I've got to get that next book finished. I've got to write that. And I would love to write more comic books at some point, but I can't really nail down when I'll be able to.
Is the comic books, it seems like at one point they were huge. Just like baseball cards were huge, I guess. People were really collecting them. Is that the case even today?
No, no, no. yeah, you're absolutely right. In the 90s, there was a huge boom in comics, and they were selling a million copies apiece. Then people figured out they really weren't that valuable, and there was an implosion. And it was horrible for the industry. Put a lot of publishers out of business, put a lot of writers and artists out of work. And the industry's been sort of slowly recovering from that ever since. And it's become, I think, a more respectable art form in the last 10 to 20 years. I don't think it has the stigma that it used to. It's not just superheroes, not that there's anything wrong with superheroes. But especially with all the movies coming out, it's coming back.
Right. If I wanted to find out more about The Yard, about Alex Grecian, I'm sure you have a website out there.
I do. AlexGrecian.com.
What do we see?
What do you see?
Yes. can I read a chapter of the book or anything?
I think so. There's an excerpt on the website, and there's a trailer for the book on the website, so you can watch a little animated movie about it. There's a little bit about me. There's some interviews with me there, and a link to this, I'm sure.
Now, did you have any input in the little trailer? That sounds like it's fascinating.
It is. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. And the music's great. And I had no input at all. My my British publisher, Penguin UK, made it and sent it to me. And it's just awesome. I love it. I've watched it, 20 or 30 times.
All right. Well, the book is The Yard. It's a novel by Alex Grecian. I tell you what, you're going to go back just about a year after the Jack the Ripper fiasco with Scotland Yard. Like Alex said, police there, they weren't really all that looked up to at the time since they didn't solve that murder. The first part, the hook is you have a body in the box, and this kind of rather new guy is an inspector. He's taking over the case to maybe the chagrin of some of the other inspectors. You can read it all in The Yard. It's a page-turner by Alex Grecian. Alex, thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, for Cover to Cover. To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.